Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 12:58 p.m. that is Pacific Summer Time, and today is June 9th. Today we had something of an all change moment in tech stocks. We can see here that the Nasdaq 100 was down almost 3%, but it has staged a 20-point rally in just the last 5 minutes. These are delayed prices that I'm getting off the Bloomberg here, so it is down in the region of 2.5%. When we look at that on the daily chart, it becomes quite clear. This is the second downside key reversal that we've had since the middle of March. And the most important point about a key is the key to the key is size. This is a large one. It stands out as the largest pullback we've seen on the Nasdaq since at least June of last year. That's also a point that's worth considering, that we are in the more volatile part of the year. Then the key to the key is size, but follow through on the downside would be a confirming signal. And that would mean that it would have to fall again next week to confirm the signal. When we look at this chart, the downward dynamic stands out clearly. And what the bulls will be looking for is the fact that it has rallied up off its low intraday and really just in the last hour of trading. So there has been at least some people looking at bargain hunting. But when we start to look at some of the individual shares, we can see that this has been an all change moment from the perspective of accelerating trends. For example, Nvidia was as high today as 168 and closed out the day closer to 150, and it has been surging higher. It is still, even after today's massive downside key reversal, it is still $50 overextended relative to the trend mean. Now, it isn't as if this is a company that doesn't have earnings. It does. Does it have a solid growth trajectory? Absolutely. Is it quite well leveraged to autonomous vehicles and the growth of artificial intelligence? Yes, it is. But the problem is that we have a perfect example in Nvidia of what we see in accelerating markets, that analysts begin to compete for the mantle of the biggest bull in the bull market. And it's easy to understand why that happens, and indeed how it happens, because fundamental analysts, what they generally do is they take a linear progression of earnings growth previously, and they extend it into the future, and they say, well, if they've been growing their earnings at 5% for the last 5 years, well, then chances are they might grow them at 5 to 7% over the next year. And then when they fall behind the curve, then they have to up the ante. They have to come up with a more creative reason for why earnings are going up. And as soon as they start coming up with creative reasons, they stop looking at linear projections of past earnings and they start looking to the future. And the future has got this very attractive siren quality. So when you start projecting what earnings might be, then you're given much more leeway as to what they might in fact be, and then that sets off competition. And on the other side of the equation, when people are buying, the best time to buy is following a pullback. I think everybody knows that. If this is a buy low, sell high environment, well then you should be buying the dips. But that is not what people do. They want to chase momentum, they want to get fast profits, they want to get long, and they want to get leveraged. But if you were buying yesterday on that really big move on the upside, well then you would have been very much in the camp that would have been really hanging out for these very ambitious forecasts. For example, Citigroup today came out and said that they thought that Nvidia shares would double. And they might well double, but what the bulls would be looking for is that they would double before the end of the month. And that is what they would have been hoping for when they were buying yesterday. At some point in an accelerating trend, you get to a point where everybody who wants it has it. And at that point, all that are left are potential sellers. And there was a certain amount of bell ringing today when we had these very ambitious forecasts being coming out, not just from Citigroup, but from a whole slew of investment banks, that they were trying to get ahead of the curve. And they really did get a bit too far ahead of the curve. So at the very minimum, it is looking increasingly likely that we are into a mean reversion, that this is a peak of at least near-term significance, and that it is likely to hold up the price for a couple of months at the minimum. And if we look back at December, when Nvidia was the best performing share last year, that peak held up the price for 4 months. And this is in fact a much larger pullback than we saw even back then, and from a much higher price. So I think it is reasonable to anticipate that on the assumption, of course, that it isn't immediately countermanded next week, that we are into a corrective phase for some of these shares that have been accelerating higher. Of course, the other one that has been just going up by multiple percent every day is Tesla, and that was down $14 today, but it is not posting the same kind of downward dynamic that we saw on Nvidia. It hasn't been subject to quite the same amount of bullishness, but it is clearly registering a downside key reversal. So that would suggest that this is also at least a short-term peak, and potentially a medium-term peak for Tesla. It has had an explosive breakout from that 3-year range, and it is looking increasingly likely that at least some of that is going to be unwound. And it is about $90 overextended relative to the trend mean, so there is ample space in which for this to consolidate, even when we start looking a little bit further afield. We look at, for example, Autodesk. This is a clear downward dynamic, and it had accelerated higher. So that puts at least a pause on it, and most likely this is a reversionary process in here right now. When we look at, for example, Lam Research, and sorry, that's the wrong ticker. No, it's LRCX. This has been doing fantastically well as well. But then it is also pulling back. It was not able to hold this move to above 160 today, and we get this large downside key reversal on the daily chart. So when you see these kinds of moves, there are two kinds of things that happen. One is that big institutional investors, they will get these calls on a Friday afternoon saying, "Right, we're going to have a meeting over the weekend because we need to decide about what we're going to do with this thing. We've done fantastically well out of it, and what is going to happen now?" Then there will be some people that are the ones that have been most, I think, taken in by the very ambitious bullish forecasts, who will say this is a buying opportunity. And we've seen some evidence of that today, that there has been some buying the dip. But what we are now beginning to see is that there is going to be profit erosion starting to creep into some of these shares. That some people are going to make the decision that it's time to stop buying, and that they have become really that there has been a very aggressive period of time where just about everything has gone right for the stock market, and it is looking increasingly likely that that's over for a while. But that's probably all it is. When we look at, for example, the Nasdaq on a weekly basis, then I don't think anybody would quibble with the conclusion that it is a little bit overbought, and it had raced up towards this 6,000 level, and that it is due some pause and consolidation. That is, I think, quite likely, and it has about 500 points in which to consolidate and still remain above the trend mean. So that, I think, is something that we can anticipate. And if we look back over the last 7 or 8 years, there have been a number of occasions on which in which the index went sideways or down for a couple of months and then recovered. So I think that this is a point where if you are long of something that has been accelerating higher, well, this is at least a time to be thinking about. If you want to sell, then this is not a bad time to be taking some profits with a view to potentially buying more when it has pulled back towards the mean, because this is about as good an opportunity as one has for potentially harvesting some of the profits that might have been built up over the last 7 or 8 months. I think that is probably the best conclusion that we have. But when we start to think about these markets over the medium term or over the long term, this is not the same situation that we have had back in the 1990s. These companies are multi-billion dollar companies that have multi-billion dollar earnings, and what we can say with confidence is that a lot of the future earnings have been priced in a very short period of time. So we're really only thinking about the potential for mean reversion rather than a really big pullback, because I have seen an increasing number of forecasts talking about the potential for a really big pullback, and the rehash of 2000 or 2008 being proposed by quite a number of different people. But despite the fact that we have had an accelerating market in some very in a very small number of shares, that really only says that we're into a mean reversion process. Two of the things that could really derail the bull market, such as it is, despite the fact that we have this short-term potential for a pullback, this is still a medium-term to long-term bull market. And what are the things that could potentially derail that medium to long-term bull market? Well, one would be surging energy prices. We certainly don't have that. Oil prices have been coming down, and coming down really quite sharply for the last few weeks. And veteran subscribers who've been tuning into these broadcasts for the last few months will be, I think, more than familiar with my view that we are in for a choppy roller coaster ride in energy prices, but that it is unlikely that we are going to see a sustained move above $60. There is ample additional supply that is economic at 50, not a mind 60. And that is before we even begin to talk about the evolution of batteries and of electric vehicles. Two different stories out this week, and that's only two that I've chosen to post in comment of the day. There is practically a story about new battery technology every day of the week, and what that also helps to highlight is just how much investment capital is moving into the chemistry sector right now. Energy storage and batteries are the linchpin for the evolution of the green environment, or the green environmental economy. That there have been massive innovations in solar technology, that it isn't simply that the price of solar cells has been coming down, but that as soon as a new technology is released and it starts out being quite expensive, that as manufacturing reaches scale, then the price of these new technologies just trends lower. And that is representing really quite an incredible sea change. Because it might be facetious to talk about Moore's Law so regularly, but we do have in the solar section, excuse me, the solar sector, there is Swanson's Law, and it is largely analogous to the Moore's Law, where we are simply seeing that the price of solar cells continues to trend lower, and that is in sharp contrast to the energy sector, which is largely reliant on the efficiency of extraction. When we're talking about the efficiency of manufacturing and the efficiency of technology, that is a very different prospect than the efficiency of extraction, and that is contributing to the low price of energy environment. And low energy prices remove a significant headwind to economic growth. So the fact that we have gone through a decade where we had to economize and really worry about the price of energy, that has probably conditioned people to think that it is always going to be a problem, and it really could be a real change where we have the evolution of solar, we have the evolution of wind, then we have the evolution of geothermal, which has the potential all by itself to represent a base load support for both solar and wind. But then we have this evolution in storage technology as well. So some of the automotive manufacturers are worried about what they're going to do with all the batteries, and they are thinking about turning them into utilities, or at least leasing that storage capacity to utilities. And we're seeing that that is already underway with companies like Renault or even Daimler. But then out there on the frontier, there are flow batteries, where one would simply switch out the electrolyte. So you would be filling up your car at the filling station, not with petrol, but with this electrolysis fluids. That means that your battery would last considerably longer. The fouling of the membrane, which contributes to the loss of the of its recharging capacity over a number of cycles, would be removed. So these are really very important trends, because it isn't that that is particularly going to be the technology that is going to solve this storage problem, but rather that there is a wall of money m pouring into this sector, so that the potential for a solution to be discovered and to be commercialized is increasing every day. So we're going to have an environment where we could have low energy prices for the foreseeable future, and that is really quite a significant change, but it is one of the tailwinds for the view that we have a secular bull market in stocks. We do have this pace, a rapid pace of technological innovation. It is certainly contributing to the energy sector. But I think it was also really quite interesting today that the Nasdaq biotech sector, that it was reasonably firm. It finished up the day in negative territory, but it has bounced from the region of the trend mean over the last couple of weeks. And this is a sector where there is a dearth of people who have been long and leveraged. In fact, this has been sort of out there in the cold, and nobody has been really worried about it. But it has been consolidating above the trend mean since the beginning of the year. And more importantly, it is trading above that trend mean rather than below it, which it did for most of last year. I think back in 2015, we said that it was liable to have a medium-term correction, that it had gone up too much, too fast, and that it was at a point where it could pull back. Well, it has pulled back, and in that pullback, it has held the vast majority of the previous advance, and now it is beginning to exhibit relative strength once more. So it is looking increasingly likely that the biotech sector could be one of the better performers over the next 6 months on a relative basis, if for no other reason. And part of the reason for that is because of the pace, not only of technological innovation, but also for commercialization, that there have been a large number of treatments, therapies, and methodologies that have been in testing for much of the last 17, 18 years, and that they are increasingly moving towards commercialization. The application of CRISPR technology has been something that has been truly revolutionary, and that is helping to speed up the pace of experimentation and innovation. So that is something that is a bullish factor right behind it. And when we think about it, there are going to be upwards of an additional 2 billion of us over the next 30 years. There is going to be significant populations of elderly people in the OECD. And we need to come up with solutions that are going to deliver better quality care at a lower price, or we are going to be in the world of problems with debt. And I think there are reasons to be reasonably confident. I think we are probably going to have to there are have to, going to have to be some kinds of changes in how these new technologies are priced in order to really generate scale and to contribute to overall wellness, and not just physical wellness but financial wellness. But that is not really an issue that is beyond the bounds of legislation or indeed cooperation. So I do believe that there are reasons to be reasonably ambitious about it. So the other thing that could potentially derail a secular bull market would be surging yields, and we are just not seeing that. If we look at the US 10-year, it has been largely range bound for 5 years already. It's currently trading around 2.2%. It was in marginally positive territory in here today. It is right in the region of the trend mean, but it is not surging higher. And I think that is the most important point. It is hovering here in the region of the trend mean. There are some very large questions out there, and one of them is that there is a wall of debt, that the response of central banks over the last 20 years has been to socialize private sector debts. That regulation has not been particularly effective. We have had a number of bubbles, and the response has been to socialize the debt so that the size of central bank balance sheets has done nothing but expand. And when we look at those central bank balance sheets, well, then we are presented with a trend that has been going up indefinitely, and it is currently at 18.7 trillion, and that is the aggregation in US dollars, or rebasing to US dollars, of the Fed, the ECB, the Bank of Japan, the People's Bank of China, and the Bank of England's balance sheets. So the ECB has been the most aggressive printer over the last year, and they have almost doubled the size of their balance sheet. Because of the fact that the velocity of money has been trending down since 1997, part of the reason for that is because interest rates have been low, and that has inhibited the investment in capital. That when interest rates are low, you're much better off borrowing money, and when interest rates are high, you need to be thinking about the return on your money. So then you invest it, and the other reason is because of the deflating influence of technology. The internet started to really take off in 1997, and with it, we had the big buzzword in the 1990s was disintermediation, and disintermediation, displacement, rationalization, they all mean in many respects the same thing, that people can have jobs as long as they're not paid very much, and the more they're paid, the greater the incentive is for them to be displaced, and an increasing number of sectors are being displaced. I think that this movement towards universal basic income is an absolute nonsense, that it is socialism or communism by the back door, and it ignores the capitalist impulse that has generated untold growth over the last 200 years. That private capital and private enterprise is the number one motivation for people to better themselves, and giving people money for doing nothing at all just encourages them to do nothing at all. And I think that is probably part of the reason that we have this crisis of identity in a number of countries, that because people have not been supported in the way that they were expecting, because standards of living have not increased, because standards of living have been supplemented by debt. That is something that is a threat, because we just do not know what the eventual outcome is going to be. We cannot continue to fund growth with debt. So eventually that will come to an end, but the big question is when. And when we look at 10-year treasuries, and go back to that chart, and they're only at 2.2% right now, and it's right in the region of the trend mean. Well, if we look at it over the last 5 years, it has been range bound. There have been a number of failed downside breaks below that 1.5% level. It got up to 2.5%, and now it has pulled back. Well, if the bears are to be proved correct, then the yields will have to rally from here. They will have to sustain a move above 2.5%, and then most particularly, it will have to sustain a move above 3%. That's not beyond the bounds of possibility, and I think the most important point is that over the course of what has been an incredible secular bull market, the strategy that does best in a secular bull market is to buy the dips. And if you were in the bond markets over the last 37 years, then if you bought the dips, you made money. And we have had a dip in bond prices. If we look at the US 30-year, for example, the price has pulled back from a peak around 175 this time last year to about 155 now. And that's a big question. What happens next? And if the buy the dip strategy is going to work, well, then it will have to sustain a move above 155. Now, that's so far has not been achieved. It is interesting that stock markets are somewhat weaker in here today, and so are bonds. And it is unusual that both stocks and bonds are moving in the same direction. The other point is that when we look at the Nasdaq and the fact that it has pulled back so sharply, that if we look at the World Equity Index page, and I think maybe if we look at the futures, it might give us a better indication, that it was really only the Nasdaq was pulling back today. The S&P 500 was only down 2, and Europe was in positive territory, and the Nikkei was relatively steady. China was in positive territory. The fact that we are most likely looking at the potential for a pullback and consolidation, that's unlikely to be limited to the Nasdaq if it has downside follow-through next week. That it will contribute to some weakness in other markets. We will likely see some profit taking. And the dollar index, if we see some profit taking on foreign indices, some of those dollars that have been moving abroad for the last 6 months might start to come back. And the dollar was a little bit firmer in here today, and it is oversold in the short term. So there is potential for the dollar to begin to rally once more. It has had a really quite a considerable pullback over the last 6 months. If we look at the longer term, then or the medium term, we have gone through a very favorable seasonal period, and we are in the first, well, I guess we're now in the second week of June, so we are now in the less favorable seasonal period of the year, and that would suggest that the potential for a pullback, a consolidation, a period of greater volatility over the next few months is more than likely going to be the base case at this stage. But the bigger picture is that if we look at the really long term, the FTSE 100 has completed a 17-year range. The Taiwanese market is back at levels last seen in 1990, and the Korean market has completed a 7-year range. The Indian market is breaking upwards. The Indonesian market is. The Filipino market is. So this is also indicative of economic growth, and that's still really quite positive. So the chances are that we are just in a mean reversion period rather than a total reversal period, and that we will be presented with more attractive buying opportunities at some point over the next few months. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I wish all the best to all of you.